Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
He's just what you'd expect for a man who covers sports. 6'4", 250 pounds, wiry, but he does know Kansas City sports as well as anyone. He's Kansas City Star columnist Sam McDowell on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We welcome Sam McDowell, columnist for your Kansas City Star. He joins us here in the program, brought to you by our friends at Joslin's Jewelry. Gary Joslin and his staff have you covered. Check it out. If you are looking for that ultimate engagement ring with more than 900, almost 1,000 engagement rings to choose from, you're not going to find a better selection. And know this, all diamonds are met by only the highest standard. They are cut and color. The clarity, scintillating diamonds are the only ones that are good enough for Gary Joslin. Check it out right now. Go to Joslin's Jewelry at 95th and Antioch. Find them online at joslinsjewelry.com. More than 100,000 repairs. Happy to be your mom-and-pop jewelry store. More than 40 years serving Kansas City. You're part of the family. The moment you walk in the door, see for yourself at 95th and Antioch. Sam, how are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
Good. Breaking from WFAA. In Dallas, television station, Rashi Rice is under investigation for allegedly hitting a photographer at a club Monday night. This according to the Dallas police. Is there a click on that or no? That's it.
Yeah.
That's it, right? That's all we have. There's no more?
No, it has the address of the place. It was a place called the Lit Kitchen. Officers interviewing witnesses about the incident that allegedly happened. They gave the address, and it's the address of a place called Lit Kitchen. The rest of the story didn't have anything else that I saw. It just goes into background about the crash earlier in that story.
Okay, so we don't know. They're investigating him. Don't know if it's true. If you know what Rashi Rice looks like, I don't know that he's a household face, although he's more notable now in Dallas after what he's had going on, but... You know, I don't think he's the easiest guy to identify, but if you could, he would be a target. I mean, maybe a reason to lay low, not hang out in clubs, maybe stay home. But young people like to go out. I'm not going to bust chops on that. And there are people who have gone out and tried to start crap with famous people. It does happen. So we'll see when the investigation is done what the Dallas police come up. But at the very least, it's not a good look.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, just to underscore that part, we don't know what happened here. I'm finding this out, as we all are, based on the breaking news from this TV station in Dallas. Royce West, his lawyer, asked us to judge Rashi Rice on his full body of work, not on the incident that took place earlier this year. And... these are just allegations. It does not say that Rashi Rice has been charged with anything. So you hope for the best for his sake. But I hope this is not part of that body of work that we were asked to judge Rashi Rice on.
Where would it leave him? If
look, I mean, it's closer to a pattern, right? If the investigation leads to charges or something of that sort. So... I mean, we are. I know you're not asking me for this specifics. I think we're several steps away from what it means for a spot with the Chiefs or NFL. First, we have to see if these allegations are true, if they're proven true. And right now, he obviously has the presumption of innocence, and to defend himself, like you said, we don't know the circumstances, even if this incident did happen. But it's certainly concerning just that his name is in the news for this reason again.
But we would assume that there was some kind of conversation had. Andy Reid said he had talked to him. And presumably there was something said to him like...
Well, he was part of the virtual phase of OTAs for the Chiefs, yeah.
But I mean about his behavior and future going forward. I would think there's like, listen, no more trouble. Would you have a zero tolerance policy after the video that you saw of the incident and what they're already dealing with? I mean, I think you might. Like, I don't want to say, you know, I think that Andy Reid's such that if you put that out there, like, listen, you can't have any more of this. And then this comes up. Do I think he's going to get cut, even if this is found to be true? No, because I'm sure there's probably he said, she said, well, the guy stuck the camera right in my face, or he was asking me these ridiculous questions. And, you know, I think it's going to be difficult. Like, we're going to see. Now, did he punch him several times? The man's been beaten to a pulp. Were there other people that jumped in that would show a pattern of behavior with friends? Then yeah. Maybe that could be different.
Hitting, we don't really know what hitting means.
Yeah, what does that mean? He pushed the cameraman away, and the guy saw an opportunity to make a buck. We'll see.
I think we saw the Devontae Adams incident, for example, at Arrowhead Stadium. When was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah. 22 season.
There's obviously, to Curtis's point, this has a wide range. And total credit to this TV station for having sources that gave them at least this much, but this much leaves a lot more up to interpretation for now until there's more details available.
Do you have a right to take someone's picture in a public place?
Yeah.
Always.
I don't know that always would qualify, but I think...
Presumably at a restaurant or a club...
Yeah, but I do think, the legality of it and the ethics of it are probably two different questions of that. I guess I would just underscore that.
Well,
I don't think you should.
I don't think neither one of us are going to be at a restaurant like, oh, there's so-and-so, let's go get some photos.
No.
It's legal.
It happens to us.
Stand at this table and
right.
just picture after picture.
Yeah, right? So
I hate when people do that.
I get that. Right, but this is going to be in the eyes of the law. So I'm just curious. Because I think people have different interpretations. Or maybe not even interpretations. Different ideas of what the law is without ever having looked it up. I'm in a club, you can't take my picture. Sure I can. And I'm gonna.
I think the rule is anything that's in plain view. If we did take a class on this back, it's been 15 years. But I think that was the terminology that I recall from that. It's got to be a public space and anything that's in plain view, I believe.
I mean, you can understand why a guy would be upset if his picture's getting taken.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when you're just trying to go out, have a good time. But you also would understand, hey, you know you're kind of a marked guy, so don't go out.
It's this, even the possibility, being in this situation after what happened before is the concerning part. It's the judgment part. Of putting yourself, as you mentioned, in a spot, you know, you're now a bigger celebrity than you've ever been, and to be in a position where that could happen is a little concerning, even not knowing what the full details are.
And I would say, because you said after, like we're still not even after,
right?
The last sentence, and like he's still facing 8 charges and a couple felonies for that. So, it's. This should not be an instance where a player has a feeling of invincibility because he's not like something. There's going to be consequences in multiple ways. There'll be financial consequences. There'll be professional consequences, and there will be legal consequences. He's facing 8 charges. So that's why I said, for his sake, I hope that the context clears some things up that work in his favor. But his lawyer did get up there and tell us to judge him not based on one incident, but the full body of work. And, man, we're just, a month and a half removed.
This counts. If it happened the way, again, there's a lot of ifs. It's an investigation into an alleged incident.
So let's put ourselves in Brett Veach's shoes. What are you thinking now? Oh, and by the way.
I'm thinking I wish I would have signed Tyler Boyd.
I was thinking, Tyler Boyd would have been a nice fit right before he signed 1 year, $4.5 million to Tennessee. Did you miss the boat in thinking that you were going to have Rashee Rice? Should you have been planning on him not being there at all?
Oh, yeah. I think they thought Yeah, I think they've definitely operated this off season. It's pretty clear based on their moves that they think they're gonna have Rashee Rice. For what length of time, I don't know, but I've always thought that Rashee Rice was looking at like 4 to 6 games, something along those lines. And we've all said it multiple times, but I keep saying it just in case something gets clipped. Like if. The allegations prove true. If an investigation happens and he gets charged, I think we'd all, whatever our individual predictions were, I think they'd all be different.
Well, and what does that do for a suspension?
That's what I mean. I think all of our predictions, even if you had 2 and I had 4 and Curtis had 6, whatever it might be, we'd all be increasing those numbers.
If the Chiefs, whether it's this or just the car, just the racing thing, if the Chiefs are wrong or surprised about whatever suspension Rice it gets, the same way they were about his Minihu, does that show that they kind of need to do some reflecting on their ability to gauge what the league's going to do in situations?
Sure. No. Yes. And no. So, yeah, I will say that the Minihu situation had their prediction for that suspension was going to be in line, and the NFL's investigation uncovered more than I think that the police's investigation had shown. Now, your question would be, Adam, would basically be requiring that the Chiefs learn more than, like, say, the authorities do. But to your point, like, these teams are in the dark. Like, the Chiefs right now do not know what Rashee Rice's suspension would be even before this discussion that we've had today.
I will object. Based on what his question was, which was, do they need to adjust what they're doing? Yes, they do.
How
if
so?
Because like, if you're constantly getting it wrong and you're making decisions about keeping or signing players based upon what you think it's going to be and you're constantly shorting it.
Constantly? So besides the Minihu, what's
Well, I don't know. Did they get the Frank Clark suspension right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, everyone knew Frank Clark was getting suspended, right? I mean, right, there's two gun charges back-to-back.
But let's back up. When they traded a mountain for Frank Clark and signed him for a mountain of money, everything was kind of in the past. Oh, no, we're all past it. They were wrong. He was not all past it. He had more trouble.
Well, that's a different question.
It's the same question. It's like when identifying the player.
Didn't the Hunt thing take until a video came out?
Yeah, but I thought you were asking about this. If they're bad about gauging suspensions, if that process needs to change, which I would just say, how do you get it right? Like, what is the difference? Like, what's the adjustment to be made?
I think, if you're constantly surprised, you need to assume more.
Just increase your assumption.
Well, I mean, listen, I don't know who their security people are. I'm sure they do a fine job. But if you're constantly wrong on the short end, like it's always longer, then you're not doing it right.
Yeah, I mean, I first of all, I don't disagree with that. But I can only recall one instance where the Minihu's one. Like I said, more information later came out. But also, like, I don't know what the advantage was to getting that one right. Like, they weren't going to make
any
substitute.
Well, don't sign him.
They don't sign him at all?
Well, okay. No, you could have signed somebody else if you...
Yeah, that would have been
nice. Listen, it all worked out because...
Sorry to interrupt, because I do want to make this point. Like, I am totally fine if they had not signed somebody with that kind of background, for sure.
Okay.
Don't disagree with that part at all.
Even if your point is just football-related,
yeah.
It has nothing to do with a moral code.
Yeah.
If you're, like, shocked, and that ended up being the difference, like, oh... I mean, listen, if they lost on the road, and you're like, well, that's the difference between getting it home, and we would have won at home because we always win at home, or almost always win at home, you'd have different. Now, they went on to win, and so, just football, it didn't matter. So I don't want to belabor too long, but I think anytime you're constantly wrong one direction, you need to adjust. You're in the get-it-right business about everything that has to do with building a football team. So projecting suspensions when signing a player is part of it. If you're going to sign a player at risk who you already know a suspension's coming, you should be pretty good at figuring out what that suspension is, right? So, and we can just leave that. Can you beat Kreskin? No. How can you have more information than the police? I don't think you can. But then stay away. If you're constantly getting burnt by it, stay away. Now, I don't think they're constantly getting burnt, but just to play out his question. But I do think the idea of, we can go back and say trading for Frank Clark, drafting, there is, would you say they're above average on players in trouble?
I don't know. Like, I've asked myself that question a lot, too. I don't think I have enough familiarity with the rest of the 31 teams to know how they rate for us locally, it seems like we're talking about this pretty frequently.
Yes.
More frequently than any of the three of us and Adam, too. Like, any of the four of us are comfortable talking. Like, I would rather not be having this conversation right now about Rashee Rice and a potential another legal incident, but here we are. And to your point, like, Rashee Rice is not the first guy we've had this conversation about.
So, one, it's up to the Hunt family to decide what their moral code is and what they want their franchise to look like. That's on them to come down and say, Brett, Andy, no more of these, right?
Because right now the NFL world is talking about the Chiefs, and it's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
And they do put, it's not nothing, I guess is what I was going to say. Like, yeah, I mean, I know you've had conversations with certain people about draft picks, and I have too, and there are guys crossed off the list.
For sure. But if and I agree, we're so close to it. I too do not have a chart of 31 other teams and how many felonies and, you know, embarrassments. I don't have that either. But it does feel like more. And it doesn't matter. It's too much. Like, you'd like zero. The goal is zero, right? Knowing you're not going to achieve it, but that's the goal, right? But I think you also have to ask, is it hurting the bottom line? No, it's not. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I would say there would need to be added context to that, which is the point that you guys just discussed with Adam. I mean, as far as is it hurting the bottom line? I think part of the bottom line is having the best team you can have.
They've won 3 Super Bowls in 5 years, 4 conference championships. They're raising tickets. Like,
yeah.
No, it's
that's,
not.
That's I mean, what I would think, say. No, but yeah. this situation just has the potential, I think, to change one of our minds.
Right. It's gonna. We'll see. We'll see if any fans go, I'm not getting tickets. I think they'll quickly be gobbled up, and so it's a balancing act of how much can you tolerate while you win.
And if this incident here doesn't add anything to the suspension, which ends up being 4 games, and the Chiefs go 3-1 in those 4 games, and they go on to 3-peat, once this entire thing has been played out, you can look back and say it didn't really have any impact on the bottom line. The impact hasn't been felt yet.
When it's going to hit home, because they cut Kareem Hunt and then won a Super Bowl, right? They won a Super Bowl with Frank Clark, walked on Frank Clark, and then won another one, right? They drafted Rashee Rice, won a championship. They haven't paid a football price yet.
Yeah, they won 2 without Tyreek Hill after walking away from him, obviously.
But that was a pure football move. That wasn't like...
I know, yeah.
Or maybe it was like, hey, and he's always a potential... Because he's said some stupid things in Miami, so there's always a potential for there to be off-the-field drama. Let's call it drama. With his house burnt down. I don't know. Is that because
he's being sued, I mean, by multiple women, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, football-wise, let's cash out because we don't need the drama. That's I'm sure it was definitely part of the equation. But until they pay the price football-wise, I don't think we're going to hear anybody complain. Not enough people complain ticket-wise.
I agree. I think it's a perfect point. I totally agree.
But I do think eventually when you're cutting a third-round running back, if you end up cutting a second-round wide out, when you're trading a first- and second-round pick for a D-end, when they're involved in these things, at some point you keep doing that over and over again, you're not going to win a championship.
Yeah, and I would think, I mean, look, there shouldn't be anybody more frustrated with this situation than the people inside the building, you know, from the football aspect of it. And you would think that maybe your own frustration of what you just said, you know, using a third-round pick on this player, a second-round pick on this player, and then potentially having you know, at minimum, we all know that Rashee Rice is going to be missing some games next year, at minimum. Today's allegation aside, we know that Rashee Rice is going to be missing some games. That should be frustrating for the Chiefs, too, expending that kind of – I mean, they moved up in the second round to trade for him, and now they're not going – part of their offseason was building wide receivers who were different than Rashee Rice, who did not occupy his same position. The frustration should be in that building, too.
Yeah, I think the question is, at some point, don't you ask yourselves, why are we taking these guys at risk? We have the ultimate difference maker. Do we really need to keep taking these guys?
Yeah, and look, I mean, Rashi is different than those other examples you mentioned because, like, the as far as to our public knowledge, the legal incidents have come after they acquired him. You know, with Tyreek Hill, they were out there. With Aminihou, they were out there. With Frank Clark, they were out there.
But with Rashi Rice, I asked a personnel person, what do you think about that guy? Not a good guy, good player. That was last year at draft time. I didn't say anything about it because it was one guy and there was nothing else that, you know, no one else was saying it. And what's the point? Like, okay, maybe one team had one thing, what it is.
Something you put a pen
in. I don't know.
Go back.
31 other people. You know, I know several guys on several teams. So I just use it as mostly information and file it away. But it's looking pretty accurate now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
At the very least, immature guy. Bad decisions.
Yeah, I mean, the information we don't have that you'd love to have is did people have him off their draft list? And if so, why? You know, did the Chiefs take that kind of chance on him that, like I said, you and I know that other teams have taken chances on players that the Chiefs have crossed off their list. I don't know if Rashi Rice was one of those guys. But, again, I mean, I mentioned earlier that, like, I wish we weren't having to have this conversation. Like, the Chiefs should be not pleased that this is going to be a conversation for some time now, too, about their football team. Like, they're going for a three-peat this year, and this is the conversation we're having about their team right now.
To further your point about, yes, they do have the ultimate weapon in Patrick Mahomes, they also, from a decision-maker standpoint, and Andy Reid and Brett Veach, your seats are as cool as they could possibly be. You are not in a position where you should. Now, the desire for a three-peat, I know that's out there, but there is nothing about your job that suggests you need to be desperate in any way, shape, or form right now.
Yeah, but I would argue the flip side of that you know, the more cushion that you have, you know, Andy Reid's record on this kind of stuff, I think, helps allow for the possibility to give a player a second chance.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
We're not getting fired. Let's take a shot.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
Well, and they also have a better culture, right, than I think we think most teams have. I mean, when Patrick Mahomes is the leader of your room and Travis Kelce is one of the leaders of your room, like, you have the thought that, and Rashi Rice aside, because like I said, that the legal incidents that we're aware of have followed his acquisition to the Chiefs. But when you have that kind of culture, I think that you can, you know, have somebody fit into your culture instead of change it.
We're talking to Sam McDowell. He's brought to you by Joslyn's Jewelry. We'll take a break, talk some Royals baseball still ahead here. Sam McDowell, columnist for the Kansas City Star, joins us every Tuesday here in the program.
All right, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Before the Nuggets, who was the last defending champion to lose a home playoff game by at least 25 points?
A home playoff game.
Home playoff game. Defending champion.
Well, the Lakers and Celts would be good guesses because they win so much. Mm-hmm. Had the most opportunities.
Lakers in like 11-ish were down 2-0, I know. So I'll guess them.
Nope. It was the Lakers, though.
There we go.
But not that year.
But you get it right still?
You get it right because I didn't ask for a specific
Well done,
year.
Sam.
I just said team. It does go back to the 2003 Lakers, who were three-time defending champions and lost 110-82 at home to the Spurs. Before that, you have to go back to the 1992 Bulls, who lost 107-81 to the Cavs.
Were they knocked out that year, the Lakers?
Yes. Yes, they were. It had to been that series. And they were going for the four-peat, and they lost in six games in the Western Conference semis. And that was the final game. That was the clinching game in L.A. 110-82.
Giving away some Good Sense. Order it right now at goodsense.com. You know, not only do they have that great low-carb option right now, yes, you can get their famous meatballs, their signature marinara sauce. You can get it right now and keep the carbs down. Keto diets, that's always a great option for you. You can make it even cheesier if you'd like. You know, that's all fair. But also a lot of parties going on, graduation parties right now. Get $5 off any large catering tray or family family-sized pasta with the code WHBG5. Do this at GoodSense.com. That's WHBG5. Take advantage of the sub-trays, the cookie trays, pastas, gourmet meatball slider kits. You can save $5, WHBG5, right now at GoodSense.com. Talking to Sam McDowell here in the program. Sam, let's turn our attention to a team. It's looking pretty good. They have cinched up. We said for them to prove that they're a real contender against this 19 games that they headed out on. What was it? The Prove It Tour?
Yes.
19 games against teams that had winning records. When they started the trip, they needed to go at least 9-10. 500-ish against quality opponents is what the big boys do.
Yeah.
Beat up on the little guys. They'd already beaten up on the White Sox. They have gone 9-8 with two to go. Are you ready to declare them a contender for the season?
Contender for the season. I still think it's too early. But
when will you declare that? In September?
Yeah, September like 28th-ish, maybe, if they're within a game.
Okay.
I mean, I think if you're interested around the All-Star break.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, I think we discussed before, there's got to be a sliding scale, right? Like you're five games up or something like that at the end of May. I think we'd think differently. And look, I mean, that's no knock whatsoever on what they're doing. Like, this is not where I expected them to be on May 7th. I just still have some long-term questions, specifically about the lineup, I guess. Look, I mean, I think the rotation's in a spot to where we're not going to see the 7- and 8-game losing streaks that have become just like, I was going to say annual tradition, but it's like multi-annual tradition around Kansas City for the last 8 years. So they're in a good spot, I think, to avoid like the constant 6 games or lost 6 of 7. Like, I really think that's one of the reasons Daniel Lynch was able to throw a good game on Sunday, is because they put him in a spot to where he didn't have to win a game. Like, it's the team is not feeling a bunch of pressure when they put him on the hill. Like, they have his whole career. Having said that, I don't think that they should be expecting a lot of long-term success out of Daniel Lynch. But I just think the environment matters for players. The long-term questions I have with the lineup, and Rainey's been pointing this out a lot, but, like, the numbers between bases empty and guys on base, I mean, they're...
Well, second. Curtis did it first.
Okay.
Thank you. They are...
I had it earlier a couple days ago, and I thought I had it still on my screen. But I think they're second in baseball in OPS with guys on base. It's like 828. With nobody on base, it's 605. For most teams, that gap is just not that large. And so...
And we acknowledge somewhat a statistical anomaly.
Yes, exactly.
But it's also because they have a good group that's bunched together, which you should do, which is smart.
Yeah.
And then they have a bad group that's bunched together, which you should do, which is smart.
Yeah, so the guys hitting with guys on base, to your point,
are more likely to be the better hitters.
Right.
And vice versa.
But I just, like, that's not long-term success sustainability to me. I think that, look, we mentioned their rotation. Like, their bullpen has surprised me, too, with some guys back there. You know, they're above the middle of the pack for the last, like, 4 weeks, and their bullpen FIP, fielding independent ERA. So... I think if you thought they'd be top five rotation, like top 12 bullpen, you'd probably say, okay, the lineup struggles, you can deal with them. That's exactly why they're 21-15. It just gives me a little bit of pause in saying, like, this is the team that we're going to expect through September.
If they have no injuries, like, to me, that's I don't see the depth. What Jonathan Bolin gave them is what I believe Lynch will give them next time.
Yeah.
Right? I don't see the depth. If they can miraculously stay super healthy, I think they've got a lot of answers in place. I think Matt Quatrero is really good. Are you there? Will you agree on that?
Yeah, I think he's a good fit for I think he's a better fit for some teams than others, and I think he's a good fit for this team right now. Last year, I thought that early on in April, there could have been some benefit, not to a guy thrown over the dinner table, but I thought a young team perhaps needed a reminder that, like, you got to freaking win some games. that it's not always, hey, there's another game tomorrow. For this type of team, I think that'll provide some assistance.
I think with a young team, I think here's the moral of the story. Don't have a young team. You know what young teams are? Crappy. Right? Generally speaking. Like, this team needed, like, you can't have, nobody is great with a bunch of 22-year-olds, but you sure as hell don't want a bunch of 35-year-olds. Right? You got to have a nice blend. And that's what they've done this year. And I think, you know, if you're hiring a manager to try to win a few more games with a bad team,
right,
you're ready to fire him then when the team's good.
Totally. Like, they hired him for this season.
Yes.
And why not get ahead, a year ahead start? In fact, I think one of the reasons Salvador Perez is having a much better season is just because he's more comfortable with his new environment that he's had. Obviously, we know he was really close with his catcher coach, with Pedro, who's now the manager at the White Sox, trained with him in the offseason. We know that was a very tight relationship, and I think that took some time to adjust it. So, yes, I mean, even if you're, like, it's always better to be a year early even on that decision than a year late.
But I'm Cotrero and his staff.
I think he has a really good staff, too, yes.
What's the negative?
Yeah, I think he has a really good staff as well.
I mean, I think they're squeezing every bit of juice out of this, which is another reason why I'm like you. I'm a little hesitant to say, well, this is just going to keep going. Yeah, they're good for 6 months. I'm not ready to go there because I don't know how long he can keep squeezing. Right? Yeah. I think he's going to push the right buttons tactically, mathematically. But, I really worry about the depth.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the things I was asking myself earlier today is, like, most teams, I think, most fans of teams would, if I asked this question, I said, who on the team should be having a better year? I think most fans, because of fan expectation, could list a lot of players for all their favorite teams. Like, the Royals list, I think, is pretty short on that. I don't think you could ask more from their star players. You couldn't ask for more from Salvador Perez.
I think you'd ask more from Vinny.
You'd ask for more from Vinny. I don't think.
But not Perez and Witt, no.
No, and I don't think you'd ask for more from the rotation. Like, their list is just shorter than most teams.
Which leads you to believe that there's a market correction coming.
Yeah, but also to your point, I do think that their staff is getting the most out of these players. You know, I mean, I wish I could remember what game it was last weekend. Friday night, I think, perhaps, where, you know, it's a really slow 1-1 game in the seventh inning. It was the inning that it was Friday night. Perez hit a 3-run homer to cap a 6-run inning. But before that, like, it was 1-1. MJ Melendez gets his first hit in like 28 at bats, and first instinct is immediately pinch run for him. And steal a base, base hit single. So you've got two like C&I singles through the infield. They're up 2-1. And didn't score again. So they could have won just on the 2-1 game. Like, it's a little bit, that inning I thought was very reminiscent of like the teams here that were, I do think we spend too much time comparing all these Royals teams to the iteration that won here, just because it's what we know. Also, it's what small market baseball knows. But that did remind me of like a that you could have plugged that inning into 2014 or 15 and it would have fit perfectly.
Yeah. No, I listen, they're for the most part not making mistakes. So when the other team does, the Blue Jays, the Vlad Jr. Mm-hmm. dropping the ball,
yeah,
opens the door and they take advantage of it. That's what good teams do. That's what efficient teams do, well-managed teams do. It's what Rays do.
Yeah, I mean, they lead baseball in defensive runs saved this year. I think, you know, all of our questions about the lineup revolve in the outfield, right?
They evolve from the bat part of it.
Right, right. But, like, Cal Isbell has turned into a really good defensive center fielder.
Have they still only allowed one unearned run this year? I know as of Saturday, they were fourth in the league in baseball in ERA, but number one with ease in fewest runs allowed per game.
Technically, the extra inning runs the Rangers scored would have added on. The extra inning run, oh, okay. I guess it was, would have been an unearned run as well.
That makes sense.
But terrific defensively. Like, they lead. It's not just they're getting they're making the plays they should. Like, they're above. I mean, Kyle Isbell and Bobby Witt Jr. specifically have ranked really well on defensive run save this year.
No, and that's, I think, a positive. Where does help come from? Their name is supposedly bandied about with Ariza.
Yeah, I think it's gonna. I think it's so early that it's gonna have to come internally if it's gonna come. And look, they got guys hitting and in Omaha
settle
right
down.
Now,
but settle
the
down.
Strikeout numbers are
settle. Who? Who are you getting excited about?
Well, so this was actually my point on this is that you wish that like Tyler Gentry had the numbers of like you know C.J. Alexander had, for
yeah,
example,
the 8-year-old career 20, minor leaguer,
27, I think. But like they. Yeah, I mean, I think Nick Lofton could help this team.
I do too. I think Nick Lofton and Drew Waters could come up
and
be
this team.
Somewhat of an improvement. But I don't think either one's going to come up and be like, wow.
Drew Waters is like he's done this before. He's performed in AAA frequently for this organization and just haven't seen it at the major league level. And look, every organization have guys that fit that example. Nick Prado's hit okay in the minors, but the strikeout numbers are just like they're alarming. He's striking out more than one out of every three plate appearances in the minor leagues, and like that just does not translate to the next level at all.
There are two depth pieces, Lofton and Waters, and we don't really know what they are. And with Waters, it's time. Like that's the thing when Daniel Lynch comes up, like it's like you know prospect Daniel. No. Career minor leaguer Daniel Lynch will make the start today. That's where, at 27 years old, as a college draft pick, this is where we are now.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, you and I both put it in the same bucket, which is great start for Daniel Lynch. I don't think that's what we're going to expect his next time out. But I do think that one of the takeaways is what I said earlier, like he's in a better environment than what he was asked to do last 2 years that he's been part of the rotation.
I do. They've got to get, you know, this is where the system, because at the end of this year, if we think big picture, is Waka staying?
I think that you would like to offer him a situation that, I mean, look, he signed in Kansas City after 106 loss year, right?
Right.
So I think you would like to say, hey, this, all of us in this room think this team has been better than what we expected. I think that would be part of the appeal.
Let's flip it around. Is Hunter Renfro staying?
By his choice?
It's his choice.
It's by his choice, then why wouldn't he?
I don't think he's headed anywhere else.
Yeah,
so that doesn't upgrade.
For that, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think they're kind of in a spot where there's still, I don't see who's coming to push out. So they're going to have another round of free agency. And the one thing I would say is, you know, right now, Garrett Hampson's not better than Nick Lofton. Right, Adam Frazier's not better than take your pick.
Lofton, yeah.
Nick Lofton.
Again.
So like they need a $15 million hitter. They've got a couple of $15 million pitchers. That's working. They've got three guys collectively making 10. That's not.
That was part of the way that. So I actually had a conversation with JJ Piccolo. I don't know. It's been 3 weeks or so. I chatted with him about this. Like their off season blueprint. At the start of the off season, he wrote down every position he thought they needed, and like it's more than I think publicly that they were saying. Like they had three starting pitchers on the list. You know, right handed bat in the middle of the lineup. Couple relievers on the list. Put a price tag on it at $47 million. The guys that they signed it up cost them $47.1 million this year. And the reason I point out that strategy isn't just to say, I mean, that's pretty freaking close, but to say that he had budgeted out and said, we're going to have to divvy this up. And that's how they went after the pitching market. You know, they gave guys the options that we're talking about. With hitters, because I think we anticipate potentially next offseason, to your point, like corner outfielder could be still on the list as it was this offseason. I'm not sure you could find that same sort of let's divvy it up rather than using. They had the opportunity, and I think we've all heard that they could have sunk a lot of their money into one particular ace, for example, in the offseason. Instead, they chose to divvy it up with the hitter. I'm not sure that the opposite wouldn't be the right approach if you're looking ahead to next year.
Well, and that's why, you know, it's yes, I think you got to target the spot and go and get it, but I don't know. The system has got to be better to bring up the depth pieces.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have to give $2 million for Garrett Hampson and $2 million for Adam Frazier because Nick Lofton and, I mean, even now, that's barely over league minimum now. But, like, when you're not paying for those, like, really, if you don't have to go get, for what Hunter Renfro's giving them, you should be able to get that. The St. Louis Cardinals have five of those guys sitting in AA and AAA every year.
Not anymore. They used to.
Well, they have for about 20 years. You're right. It seems to have dried up. But, you know, then you can go give 15 or 20 million to one guy that you know is going to produce.
Yeah, it's about how many holes you have, right? And that's why when JJ creates that list at the onset of the offseason, you look at, wow, there's a lot of bodies that are required to come in that you had to divvy it up in a certain way. And that's why you had to pass on the chance to sign someone else. And but you're right. I mean, you look at these guys, and I guess what I would say is, this team is this. If the season's going to be different than last year, and not just in results, but in terms of evaluating versus just the emphasis on winning now, then the urgency has to be getting pretty close to see what you have, and like a guy like Drew Waters, or see if Nick Lofton can play corner outfield. I know Kauffman Stadium is a very tough place for a new outfielder. We learned that firsthand with watching MJ Melendez learn the position, but. You aren't replacing, like, Lorenzo Cain in right field. You're replacing guys that are in there for their bat. And so I think, like I said, if the urgency has to be different than it was a year ago. And I think you've got to be getting pretty close to getting ready to see what you have in one of these guys that's hitting in the minors.
Sam McDowell is with us. We'll take a break. One more with the columnist from the Kansas City Star. Joins us each and every Tuesday here in the program. He's brought to you by our friends at Jocelyn's Jewelry. All right, wrapping up here with Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. I'll get you the things you need to know. Sean, Jay Raja coming on. We're going to talk some Big 12 football, kind of a nice breakdown of the Big 12 post-spring edition. By the way, what now becomes a disappointing season for Kansas football? We had this little debate.
Oh, that's a good question.
What can they expect? Yeah. Like, he's kind of out of the, well, anything can be explained away.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like, he's cost himself some pressure, yeah. Bowl season, I think anything less than that would, at this point, and a Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma would be disappointing. You got the quarterback back. Now, if you can stay healthy.
Really? Do you?
Yeah, I mean, they almost beat K-State last year with a preferred walk-on quarterback. The interesting part of your question is it proves that he himself has been the one to raise his own the expectations for himself.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. Sam, great stuff. We always appreciate it. We'll be reading your work in the Kansas City Star. We will talk to you next Tuesday.
Sounds great.
Sam McDowell, columnist for the Kansas City Star, all-around swell guy, too. We'll take a break. What you need to know is coming up next.
All right, how many players have had four straight 40-point games in the same playoff season? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.